The last year of the life of Rav Dessler, he experienced a lot of difficulty in walking due to very intense pain in his legs, which doctors attributed to some circulatory problems. And it didn't go away, but actually the pain intensified over time. And interestingly enough, it reached the peak of the pain was during the Levai of the Chazon Ish. During the Levai of the Chazon Ish, which was in 1953. And so the Levai of the Chazon Ish, Rav Dessler insisted on walking all the way to the cemetery. You know, he couldn't walk. He could hardly walk. Despite that, he was in excruciating pain. So nevertheless, he says, with the exception of a very few Talmidim, Kamat no one knew the pain that he was going through. He would not reveal it, he would keep it to himself. Mamish, only very, very few Talmidim, very close Talmidim. And even they, Lamaisa, did not dream that the end was near. It was only afterwards that they realized that there was some Ramazim, implications that Rav Dessler would sort of like fly by certain statements that would indicate that he was telling them that he realizes that his time is coming. But now, just in retrospect, but during the time when these things were going on, they didn't realize it. A few weeks prior to Rav Dessler's passing, he made an oral will. He made an oral will, basically, concerning the distributions of all his possessions. And he mentioned that, being that we know that Rav Dessler was a grandson of Reb Sol Salanter, just fits very much, Balamusser of his caliber, being a grandson of Reb Sol Salanter. And, the Rebbe of Reb Sol Salanter was Reb Zundel of Salant. That was Reb Zundel. And he mentioned that when Reb Zundel Salanter passed away, that Reb Zundel Salanter, before he passed away, actually gave away everything that he had. Gave everything that he had, even for those days, the stick that he used to mix the batter. It was to show that even the minus of thing, even the simplest of things, he gave everything away before his patira. And he expressed the desire, he says, to reach a situation of owning nothing in this world, so that even to write a letter, he would have to borrow a paper and a pen. Why? So Abdes explained at the time, because that the more that a person is actually attached, that the more that a person is attached to the material world at the time of death, the heart of the body, right, which is the physical element, it makes it to die. So in order to make it go easier, right, and quicker, and without, is the less attached that you are to this world, so it makes it all that much easier to move on to the next world. And Rav Dessler said that is really what is referred to in the Svarim. It talks about the Yisurim of Chibut HaKever, which very loosely translated always means that there is a particular Yisurim that a Nifter undergoes, in the Kever. So what does it mean, Yisurim of Chibut HaKever? So Rav Dessler basically said what it means is trying to have the Guf, right, depart and detach itself, which means from Olam Hazeh, to be able for the Neshama really to be able to go to its rightful place in Olam Haba. Also, at the same time, Rav Dessler discussed with the Talmidim the concept with the Gemara discussed about a Shechiv Merah. Shechiv Merah is a person who is on his deathbed and basically disposing of his property. So he was interesting, he was discussing of various things, but they had really no inkling that this was really negated to him, that this is going to happen very soon. So, in spite of the fact, as we said, that he was in excruciating pain, and as we said, that his time was coming nearer and closer, nevertheless, he continued to give his regular shmuzen. He did not hold back in any way. Not diminish any of the shiurim, all of the shmuzen that he gave in Ponovich, until the last week of his life. He continued the regular seder that he had with the yeshiva, and even the yeshiva itself, there was no awareness that he was actually in a very grave condition. After the kach, he was still planning a trip to England, because remember, he was now in Eretz Yisrael. He was now in Eretz Yisrael already, being the Mashgiach of Ponovich. And he was still planning a trip to England. And the last letter, he writes to Rabbi Arya Carmel, who was in London, which was written less than a month before his patira. But the tone of the letter was one that was still very much filled with energy. And Rav Dessler basically describes, and he writes to this Talmud, to Rabbi Carmel, and remember, this is less than a month before he passed away, he writes that he had just completed writing over 20 essays regarding Chodesh Elul. 20 essays. And when the time that he was actually writing that letter, it was already, he said, past midnight, and he writes that he's going to still be awake at least another hour preparing for the shmooze that he gives on Friday night. So this was all, as we say, not letting up in any way of responsibilities that he had. The morning of his patira was Chov Dalet Teves. Chov Dalet Teves. Lemesparim, December 30th, it was 1953. Dessler basically, as we said, was busying himself, you know, with preparations for an upcoming trip to England. He figured that every moment that he's alive, he'll do whatever he feels he has to do. There's no cheshbonus. And he still made plans to go to England. It was only in the middle of the morning. Again, he was planning to go. To leave Eretz Yisrael, but it was in the middle of that morning, they tell us to a particular Talmud, Rabbi Yisrael Greenberg, was accompanying him, that the pain in his leg is so strong now that he's unable even to lift his leg, he says, to climb even one step. So the pain even intensified even more. That afternoon, a cousin of Rav Dessler, by the name of also Rabbi Simcha Zisel, but this is Rabbi Simcha Zisel Dessler, called a specialist to examine him. At the same time, there was also a very small group of the closest Rav Dessler were in the room. And in the midst of the examination, Rav Dessler told the doctor that he's experiencing a type of pain, he says, unlike anything that he'd ever known in his life. But that was through the words that he said. But as far as the expressions on his face or anything in his behavior, one could not tell at all that he was in pain. It's just that what he felt he had to tell the doctor. The doctor should realize what his message is. But did not in any way reflect in his behavior or in his face and so on. But he said it with complete calm. He said with a complete calm. And then, as he was talking, he pointed to a progression of pain in his chest. As the doctor was there and he pointed to his chest, Rav Dessler smiled at his cousin, Simcha Zisel, he closed his eyes and didn't speak again. That was it. It was like a Mises Neshika. And he passed on to a higher world. The news struck Panevich Yeshiva, you know, like a thunderbolt. And because few had any inkling, as we mentioned. Nobody had any inkling how serious the matzav was. He did not reveal it to anybody, did not tell anyone. So groups were quickly arranged to remain with the Nifter until the burial, which was the next day. The next day, the Levi departed basically from his house in Zichron Meir section of Bnei Brak. The Maspidim were a number on record. It was Rabbi Yaakov Landau, who was the Rav already then from Bnei Brak, as is very well known. His son is now the Rav of Bnei Brak. Also Rav Shmuel Vosner, should live and be well. Was then much younger, was, you know, 60 years younger. He gave a hesped at the time. Also was given by the Mashgiach upon his young Rav Chatzke Levenstein. Chatzke Levenstein gave a hesped. Also Biel Lapyan was also one of the Maspidim. Also in England was a very choshev rav, Rav Shmuel Rabinov. So Rabinov Ringer gave a hesped. Also was a well-known mashgiach, his name was Rav Shapse Yogel. Rav Shapse Yogel actually was the Rosh Yeshiva of Slonim in Europe. Rav Shapse Yogel. And later was Rosh Yeshiva in Ramat Gan. He gave a hesped. And Mamishin at the grave, at the kever, Rav Hillel Vitkin, Rosh Yeshiva Beis Yosef, he gave the final hesped. The pain and the sorrow of Rav Dessler's patira, sudden patira, was so much more intensified. Why? Because we're just 10 days after the patira of the Chazon Ish. They didn't yet get over. Bnei Brak in the world did not yet get over the patira of the Chazon Ish. So you can imagine 10 days later having this this taking place situation. Now, so when I mentioned that one of the last letters of Rabbi Dessler basically talks about the concept where the Gemara talks about Sifsois of Doiv's behavior. That the lips of a person, I speak in the grave, that means if you say over Dvar Torah, in the name of a person, even after he's long gone, in a certain sense, the figure of speech means in, so the speaks, the lips of the Nifter basically continue to speak on. And what it means is that even many, many generations later, even many generations later, subsequent generations, lips of the one who first brought this Chiddush into the world, is continues to speak. You're hearing him speak. It is said that certainly that which Rav Dessler pointed out, that the lips of a Nifter can speak from the grave, certainly is all the more true by him. because many, many, as he said, years that have passed since the passing of Rav Dessler. Nevertheless, he says, his words continue to speak from the grave to the same extent. It is said that those who were privileged to hear him, the impact has little diminished by the passing of years. 60 years after his passing, every yahrzeit, groups of Talmidim continue to get together in Gateshead and Ponovich for many days, a basic of spiritual arousal. And, interesting, one of the closest Talmidim, who was later on also a Mashgiach, you know, Reb Chaim Friedlander, very choshes farm, Sif Sechaim, many, many Chalokim that were printed, very choshes farm, also translated into English, by the way. So his closest Talmud from the Ponovich period, Reb Chaim Friedlander, according to the family, never gave a shir, right? Never gave a shir that a day going by without mentioning something about Rav Dessler, which means that the Torah just kept going on and on. And someone also, Rabbi Moshe Miller, he was, of course, of the famous girls' school in Gateshead. Also, hardly a day went by in any of the shmuzin that would not mention some chiddush of Rav Dessler. And it is very interesting that it is said that 50 years after his patira, that every year, they said, literally hundreds of sets, of new sets of Michtam Eliyahu are continuously being published, you know, as the years go by, on and on and on. So certainly the impact is still there. And for us, this is Monday would be, I guess, for the season. This will be it. So it's very befitting that we spoke a little bit about the patira of Rav Dessler. And all we can say is that in schus of learning his Torah, we should be zeicher that he should be a melech yosher for all of us, and schus ha'yogan aleinu. So let's take a look at the essay that we have now. Okay, actually, I think to save some time, we'll start by the bottom one, which is HaChesed VaHaBechira. HaChesed VaHaBechira. Now then, loving kindness and free will. Making a connection between Chesed and Bechira. The person has free will. Because Baruch Hu created man, giving him the ability to choose. But at the end of the day, there will be consequences, depending on what a person chooses. But you have free will to choose. This basically is an extract of a letter that was written by Rav Dessler from England, he says, to the Ponovich Yeshiva. This was in 1948. And this essay, again, in the form of a letter, and he says the following. He writes that Shemati in the bottom, Achesed Babachir, Shemati Mecher Hamyuchen Begdoyla Hamamikim. He said, I heard from one of the most profoundest of thinkers, says Rav Dessler, Ashudati Bedoyri. One of the most profound thinkers, he said, I knew in my generation. He says, Chochem v'Kodesh. First of all, he was a Chochem and also a Kodesh at the same time. Rabbi Yerucham Alevi Zatzal Medemir. Okay, the Mashgiach of Mir. Rabbi Yerucham, the Mashgiach. He calls him one of the most profound thinkers that he ever knew, he says, in my generation, writes Rav Dessler. And that is, Ke'ien ha-Bechira ha-Toyva. He said, what does it mean choosing well? What does it mean to choose well? Bechira ha-Toyva. You have free will. Now, what's called choosing well? So he says, Ke'yin ha-b'chira ha-toyva hu, he said, choosing well means that a person reaches an understanding, Shodam yivchar, the person chooses, losum atzmoy lemuchrech. It means that a person is able to bring himself into a state where he no longer really has a choice. In other words, the right thing becomes so right, and so positive and real in his mind, that when a challenge comes up a second time, he doesn't feel, right, a need to make a choice, but really, there's no other choice. It has to be this. As if there was a compulsion to do that. That's the ultimate and called in Bechira Toiva. The person is able to recognize the right thing to such an extent that there's no other choice for him. It's only this choice. That's called Bechira Toiva. And in a certain sense, he's forced to make this choice. And he goes out. Vahainu, he says, this, you reach that type of a conclusion, or this madrega, it means sheyakir v'yeda. It means that when a person knows and he recognizes, ki be'emes mukhrech l'asos ritzon koinoi. It means the person comes to realization, he has no option but to do the will of Hashem. If the person really understands that, in other words, this becomes ingrained, this becomes really part of him. It's not just intellectually, but really this is what he feels. This is really real, this is tangible. If a person really realizes that he has no other option but to do the will of Hashem, so now when a person comes to a crossroads, right, to turn right or to turn left, he doesn't feel that he has a need to make a choice or to feel challenged, but it comes to a point where he feels that clearly there's only one way. And he goes on to give an illustration to that. He says, it comes to a situation, first of all, how bechol dovah sheyedah adam. For example, take a situation where a person, right, if he knows shimlo yasa oisa yizbo kosher, if a person realizes that he's going to do a certain thing, right, he understands that it's going to hurt him. If a person recognizes that doing something is going to hurt him, he will strain himself to try to avoid it, because he doesn't want to get hurt. So, that's a fact in every situation. That's a fact in a situation that if a person realizes shimla yasa oisa yizbo kosher, that if he's not going to do it, right, he's not going to do it, then he's going to have to suffer. So yegas atzmei lasoisoi. It means that he's going to strain himself, that he's going to do it. He's going to strain himself to do it. Now, he says there's two types of compulsions. There's yesh hechrech techni, there's something that's technical that has to happen because of technical reason, which is not by choice. For example, if you take a ball and you throw it, right, you know that the ball is going to hit the victim because that's the technicality of the situation. The force that was put into that throw is going to cause a situation. That's called a technical compulsion. It means it's going to happen technically. You're throwing a person on top of somebody else. The person being thrown has no choice. It's going to happen because that's the technical situation. This is the way you put in motion a procedure. So, if someone throws his chaver, the person who's being thrown, the person being thrown has no choice because he's in the air and he's going to fall on the other person. But that's a technical situation that has to happen. That's a technical situation. However, he says, but there is also a compulsion which is based upon recognition. It's not something technical. It's based upon real recognition. The yesh hechrech, but then there's also another compulsion, which means it has to happen. It's a birur ha-hakora. That because of birur ha-hakora, because there's clear recognition of the alternatives. For example, also again an illustration. Kimayha nigzor yidei lister mizuyin. For example, if someone becomes accosted and faced by an armed robber, and the armed robber says to him, I give you two choices, your money or your life. Is it really a choice? I mean, yeah, technically he has a choice. Yeah, he has a choice. He can say, you know what, I'd rather give up my life than my money. But the fact is, and the person knows clearly, there is no other choice. Yes, he's able to choose the wrong thing, but clearly he's not going to do that. He understands the consequences. But when somebody realizes it's a question either his money or his life, well then, of course, there's a compulsion to do the right thing. He doesn't feel that he has a need to exercise free will or to make a choice, because the choice is obvious. There can't be any other choice for me. It has to be the money has to go, not my life. I have to save my life. Shimon, you understand? He understands he's not going to give himself over. He's giving over his possessions to the robber. You understand? He's going to kill him. So he obviously, if it's a question of money or life, he knows what the right decision has to be. He doesn't feel that he's being challenged and to make a decision. He says, Acha koponim. He says, Gam kozeh, but it's also a point that's called hechrech. But that's also called a compulsion, but it's called a compulsion which is based upon clear recognition, realizing what the alternatives would be. So Mamele, he says, so now understand, lefizeh, if that's the case, it follows that mishu deya hater, that somebody has clear recognition, ubarehu beliboy, right? And he clearly recognizes the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He recognizes Devar Gdulas Reboinoi Umakiris Oitzim Tsoras Hamam Rispiv, and he also recognizes how miserable it would be if he defies HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If this piece of knowledge is real, if this is something that you recognize the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you also recognize what the alternative would be if you defy HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So how Bevada Yitzis Atzim Mukhrech, so sure you find yourself compelled to do and fulfill the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that is the ultimate Madrege, where Bechira actually becomes a Hechrech. Although technically, yes, you have a Bechira, you have a choice. But based upon what you know, based upon what you understand, it's not really a challenge. But rather, it's as if you're forced to do the right thing. Because the right thing is so real in your mind, and you understand the consequences of the other side, that it becomes just compulsive. The choice becomes mandatory in your mind. That's the Madrege where a person reaches, to do the right thing. So it goes on to say further, and he says, "V'hinei motzosi, kosu b'shem hagro zal." I saw written, he says, "B'shem the Vilna Goyin." A remarkable statement, he says. Dora nifle me'oid. He saw the name of the Vilna Goyen, he says something, and the Goyen says as follows. B'chol Perul, he says, every action you see that a man, every move that you make, yesh rotzen koydim lo. The Goyen points out something quite simply. He says, before a person does an action, there has to be a will to precede it. Because if you don't want to, then you're not going to do it. So basically, if you're doing something, there has to be a will. There has to be a will to that precedes it, he says. Again, b'chol pu'ula, any action, yesh rotzim koydim lo. There's a rotzim, means there's a will, right, that comes before it. Now that you have a will to do something, what follows? It follows that you also have the capability, right? You have the capability. Yesh hayecholus lemalus erotzim ahu. And now a person has the capability, right, to make the will, to turn the will into a reality. What it means is shayecholus, which means the capability, right, is the instrument of the will. The capability of the person is the instrument of the will. If I have a will to do something, so what's the instrument of that will? The instrument is the capability. The ability to do it, that becomes now the instrument of the will. Says the Goyim, Omnom, he says, Rotzen Hashem is Baruch Hu. The way HaKadosh Baruch Hu really set it up and what Hashem's objective is. What is Hashem's will? Now, Hashem has a will and we have the capability. Hashem's will is that we do the mitzvahs. However, he left the capabilities up to us. Whether we are going to follow, utilize our capabilities to do what the Rotzen Hashem is, or maybe to use our capabilities in the opposite direction. As he points out, Omnom Rotzen Hashem is Baruch Hu. True Hashem wants. That's the want. That's the will of Hashem. Yeah, we know the will of Hashem. Shinikayim, we should fulfill the mitzvahs. But the instrument of that will, which is the capability, right? Skip the brackets. Mosalonu. Because Baruch Hu gave that over to us. He gave us over the capability. Why? By giving us the freedom to act as we please, as we choose. V'hi abchir, and that is the choice. Asher b'yecholiseinu lasis kasha nibcharonu. What is though our duty? Yeah. We have a choice to use our capabilities, either to fulfill the Rotzen Hashem, or to do otherwise. But our duty is to return the capability to where the Rotzen comes from. Which means, Ma'atu M'chayov Amonu. But now he says, our duty is, L'hagzalo Yisborach, to return the capability. That capability Hashem gave us. He gave us the health. He gave us the strength. He gave us the power. He gave us the ability. But we should return that capability to utilize it for what Hashem's will is. To return it as Yecholtoi, to return the capability back to Kodesh Baruch Hu. How? Hainu shenasa satsmenu. How's that? Because if we turn ourselves, right? If we turn ourselves into a state of inner compulsion, it means that our capabilities really are also part of Hashem itself. Because why? Because it comes in our mind that we have no other choice other than to do the Rotzen of Hashem. So it turns out that we've returned our capabilities back to Hashem, that we can only do that which Hashem wants. Based upon the clear understanding of what Kodesh Baruch Hu is and what the consequences would be the other way. He says, that's really mamish. He says, Kediva Rabbi Yeruchim, basically also as stated from Rabbi Yeruchim. Yeruchim points out that the old madrig is that Bechira really becomes a compulsion. Yes, technically you have a choice to do what you want, but when the realization of something is so clear, right, it doesn't matter that you have a technical choice, but you have no choice. For you, there's only one choice. And the truth is, you know, the Bala Musa pointed it out very, very vividly. And it's something which we can understand that it's in a drastic moshul. We're speaking about people, you know, today we're living in a crazy world, you know, with clothes, without clothes. I mean, there's no sneeze, there's nothing. But serving people by nature have a sense of dignity and are embarrassed, right? They understand what in society you wear clothes. If you ask a person, we're talking about a person, an ethical person, you have a choice to walk in the public street without clothes. Well, technically he has a choice. But he doesn't have a choice, because it's not possible for him to do it. He can't do it. Technically, sure, I can take my clothes, I can do it. But being that in our mind, it would be such an embarrassment, it would be something, it goes against the grain of everything that you believe in, that you stand for, so you can't do it. The expression of a person is, I can't do that. You can't, sure you could. You don't want to do it. But it means it's so against everything that I stand for that the expression becomes, I can't, even though you really could. If a person goes on top of a roof, 5 stories high, you ask him to jump off. Now he knows it's going to have to jump off. He'll meet his maker very quickly. So he'll say, I can't jump. You can't? Sure you could. You don't want to. Ah. It's so against everything, right? It's so against everything to jump, to lose his life, to want to, that the expression is, I can't. Technically, yeah, he has a choice. If he wants to, he could. But he, knowing what's right for him, right, and would be wrong in this situation, to do the wrong thing, to jump, is expressed, I can't do it. Because you realize so clearly what it would mean to jump. The same thing when it comes is in Avodas Hashem, in doing the Rasan of Hashem. A person can see and understand so real with such clarity what his obligation, machoivosa be'olomoi, and understand what the concept would be, that not he's not allowed to do an Avera, he can't do the Avera. He can't, sure he could. But to him it's so real, the right thing, as opposed to the other thing, that it becomes in a situation that smucher, kill, it's a compulsion. For him it's not a challenge, it's not a bechira for him to do the right thing. It's not shaykh for him to do anything else, it's not possible for him to do anything else. That's the madrega that we're talking about over here. Actually, Rav Gifter says it also, there's a pasuk it says about my Sersheni, you know, that's taken up to Yerushalayim. Mashiach has to be eaten only Yerushalayim. You can't eat it outside of Yerushalayim in Eretz Yisrael. The Torah's lashon is loisuchal. You can't eat it b'sharecho. You can't eat it in your private cities. So I get to say, when you can't? Sure, I could. I'm not allowed to. But the Torah is trying to tell you, if the Torah says that you're not allowed to, in your mind it should be you can't. But loisuchal lecho. You can't? Sure, I could. I'm not allowed to. But the idea is that you live and come to a madrega, that which the Torah says is prohibited, it becomes in your mind so against everything that as if you can't, as if you're paralyzed, that you can't do it. Being the fact is that the Torah said that you can't do it. That's the leisuchal. You can't eat it all over. You can't strike it, but you're not allowed to. If you're not allowed to, it's as if you can't. That's the realization. That's the leisuchal. That's the emphasis that Rav Gifter puts on that pasuk, leisuchal echol, b'sharecho. So we go further. And he goes on to say that Omnam Heruni Dover Zem Mefurish Vidiv Rabbeinu Zechron Lavrocha. Rabbi Sein Zechron Lavrocha. Rav Dessel said that in fact he said someone pointed it out to him. Interesting, the honesty. Rav Dessel will bring a medrash. All he has to do is point to the medrash, but he says somebody showed it to me. You shouldn't think that automatically. Shouldn't Chas V'Sholom think that he knew it by himself? And he's taking the credit. No. He says somebody showed it to me. Somebody showed it to me. Even if he wouldn't say anything, right? He didn't say that he knew it either. He didn't say anything. No, he wants you to know clearly, not for one moment that you should think that he's misleading you, that he knew it. No, somebody showed it to me. On the Harunid of Azem Mefurish, he says, the Medrash is in Bereishis Rabba. The Medrash is in Parashas told this. Makes a very fascinating things. If you analyze, various features that we have in the human body, various limbs, you'll notice that the operational standard of different limbs, not only that they do different things, but certain limbs are in control, are within your power, certain limbs are not. For example, here the Medrash points out very beautifully. The Medrash as follows. It says, There are six things that serve man. Of these six things, he says, divided, three and three. Gimel b'shusoy, three of them are in the power of man, are in his power. The gimel, and also he says, and three are shloi b'shusoy, and three he says are not in his power. Ho'ayin, the eye, v'ho'izen, and the ear, v'achoytim, the nose, are shloi b'shusoy, of your power. In other words, if your eyes are open, your eyes are going to see. Can you imagine a person is going to say, I don't want to see this. If you don't want to see, then you have to turn your head. But wherever the eye is going to see. You don't have control on the eye. The eye sees. What you can do is move the eye away. But the eye is there, it's going to see. The nose is going to smell. You have no control. It's not going to smell, really. You can stop breathing for a little while, not too long. And then the voice, the ears. If somebody's going to speak, then you hear. Automatically. It's not the person's conscious mind. Okay, I want to hear. Then my ears are going to hear. And you say to yourself, no, I don't want to hear. No. You don't have control. If the ears, if somebody's saying something, your ears are, you're going to hear. So the eyes, the ears, and the nose are shloi b'shusoi. They're not within his power. Hapeh, the mouth. Vayad, the hand, vayregel, these are b'shusoi. The mouth only talks if you wanted to, even though for some people you can't tell that. It seems it's just, it's no control. I don't know. So can put another one in there. But the pair, and then the yad, and the hand, okay, the hand doesn't just move by itself. It moves. And then Vaharegel. These are Bishusoy. In other words, if you want to speak, you'll speak. If you want to move your hand, you will. If you want to go someplace, if you don't want to, you won't go. Now, so three Evarim, right? They work instinctively. Three Evarim, like you have. You have the ear, the eye, and the Chotim. And the Medrash says that Bishoshu is Zoyche, when a person is Zoyche, Kodesh Baruch Hu Oise, what Kodesh Baruch Hu does, if a person has a schus, Kodesh Baruch Hu takes the three. He takes the three Shebishusoi, he takes the three which are in his power, right? And what does he do? Shaloi Bishusoi, and he places them outside his power, which means this, a person can reach a madrega that his mouth instinctively will speak Divrei Torah. Even though the mouth is something basically is controlled by the person, right? If he wants to speak, it'll speak. If not, not. But you can reach a madrega. The Medrash talks about where Yitzchak Avinu, you know, with the Esav of Yaakov, that at first he wanted to give a klola, but it changed into a brocha. And certain things brings other psukim, where a person wanted to do one thing, yet a Kodesh Baruch Hu made the hand go and do something else. The idea is where a person reaches a certain madrega, where a Kodesh Baruch Hu will guide a person that even those normal limbs, right, which are really in his power, but he placed them outside of his power, and they're going to do tremendous things. So Avdesta says, Mikan. He says, from here you see that a person can have the Siyat Lishma, you can have a heavenly aid. Shemaim can come down, right, and aid your body to bring a person to a state of compulsion to do the right thing. You can have the Siyat Lishma. Mikan, from here again, you see Sheesh Geder, you see that there's a possibility, the Siyat Lishma means there is a heavenly aid, there's a concept that Shemaim, yes, will help you. Shemaim will come, right, and allow your mouth to do the right thing, allow your hands to do the right thing, and to feed the right thing, L'sayei Elodom Lasis Asma Mukhras, to bring a person to a state of compulsion, that he should have to do the right thing. Right, U'bechines Ha'isalus Al-Ashleim Asi, he says, and this happy state means that a person feels compelled that what? That everything is directed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Asher Oysa Sodom Atzmei Mukhra B'Cholin Yonav, he makes himself, right, compelled that whatever he does, it should be Kulay Miyuchet Achla V'Dos Yisbarach. The aim by Shir Klal Me'atzmoi, and there's nothing left over for himself. In other words, his Metzias, his existence in this world, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Kovet should come ahead, to reveal Kvod Shemayim, to bring Hashem's glory into the world. As he says, Zulus Hanitzrach Legilu Kvoidi Yisbarach. He says, that state, he says, great tzaddikim have reached. That whatever they did brought out a Kvod Shemayim, brought out Hashem's glory into the world. Behind the Gedor Amoram Zal, that's what Chazal referred to, for example, the Yovois. Yeah, they certainly did. Avram Yitzchak Yaakov, Chazal referred to the Yovois, Avram Yitzchak Yaakov, our father's Yovois, Hein Hein Hamakove. They are the chariot of the divine presence. You know what that means? It means as follows. If you see tell you that we don't have a monarchy over here, but I guess if you go to England, or certainly in ancient times, we've all read about that. If you see the royal carriage, right, with the six white horses, and you see an entourage, and you see the royal carriage, right, you can assume that the king probably is in there. Because the royal carriage, you know, is that's where the king sits. Tzaddikim are so connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that when you see a tzaddik, you know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there, because the tzaddik is the royal carriage of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The tzaddikim, they are the merkava, they are the royal carriage. In the same way, when you see a carriage, right, you know the king is there. When you look at a tzaddik, you know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. It's as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu rests upon the tzaddik, and the tzaddik, wherever he goes, right, he represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he's the merkava, he is the chariot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because whatever the tzaddik does is to bring out the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in that sense, tzaddikim are called malochim. In that sense, we find that tzaddikim are called angels. Why? Because angels don't have free choice. A tzaddik becomes in such realization, he comes to such clear recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that to him there is no other choice but to do the Ratzon Hashem. In a certain sense, like a malach. Just like a malach has no free choice, the same way that tzaddik also reaches a state of compulsion, he also feels he has no free choice. As the Pasuk says, Shamalach Eina Boicher, the malach is he doesn't choose. El Mukhrach, but rather the Malach, right, does what he has to do. He has no choice. Begeder lo yizbu belechton. The Pasuk says they do not turn when they walk. And as the Malach goes straight and does exactly what he has to do, which means that there's nothing that could deflect the Malach from doing the purpose that the Malach has to do. So that is basically that is the nekuda. One more small thing, Rabbi Sadi, we're going to see over here. I want to take a look over here. Alright, one more nekuda. Rav Dessa also gives us a little bit of an idea of how a person makes it easier for a person when he finds himself challenged. And the question becomes, what do I do? I'd like to do the right thing, but doing the other side is so tempting. And to be able to overcome, the tension, and to make the proper choices, even if you're not yet there at the point that it's mukher, that becomes, you become compelled to do the right thing, but at least what can help us make the proper choices? So he says as follows. The erech gadol binyan zeh. He points out to say that the erech gadol binyan zeh, he says the proper way, he says the truth is that to find out how to reach a little bit of this madrega, something that's very valuable, he says, regarding what we're talking about, that a person should be able to make the right choices. One way is, he says, yesh lehiskalalus b'toich haklal. He said that is that a person's approach, right? That a person should basically, you should lose your individuality, means to the service of the community. Not dedicate yourself to serve the community. If a person, as he's going to explain, if a person takes this as an ideal, if a person takes an ideal that my tafkid is to serve the community, it's not all about me, but to serve the community, then everything you do will be balanced on a different scale. It's not just what's good for you. Because you dedicate yourself to serve the community, then all the choices that you make are going to have to take into consideration, am I defaulting the community? Am I doing an outlet to the community, or am I benefiting the community? As he goes on to say, Kihu haderech hametsuyan. See what he says? He believes that this is, he says, a wonderful opportunity. This presents an opportunity that what? That we can approach a state of inner compulsion to do the right thing, because we reach a point where it's not about me. I have created within myself a commitment, dedication for the klal. I'm living on behalf of the tzibur, not for myself. And by the way, there's also a lot of side benefits also when it comes to Yom Neroyim. When a person is not living for himself, he's part of the klal. So the Yom Adin is not looked at him, but rather because Baruch Hu takes the schusim of the klal because he's part of the klal. Well, Chon Vassaman has a whole thing about that. So there's a lot of side benefits when a person dedicates himself to the klal. You know what, Chon Vassaman came on Yom Neroyim, he was makpid not to have an aliyah. When you have an aliyah, then you call up the person, and then he said the focus is on him as an individual. He says, I don't want on the Yom Adin to be focused, to take my, I should be stepping out of the tzibur to have an aliyah. I want to be mixed, intermingled to b'chol the tzibur as much as possible. So I'm overshadowed. So they don't open the file directly looking at me, he says, but rather I'm a part of a bigger picture, he says. Part of the bigger picture, we stand a bigger chance, he says, to be Zeche Badin. So he goes on further, he says, let me explain to you, he says. Omer Hazal, we know, everybody knows, Hazal say, V'hafter yacho kamoicho, that's klal gol b'teire. Right? V'hafter yacho kamoicho. So that's the principle we know, right? Loosely translated, so you love your neighbor as yourself. And we know the words of Hillel. Hillel said, Mai daloch sanit, right? Chuli said, L'chavroch l'savit. Hillel says, refrain from doing to others what you don't want them to do to you. Don't do unto others what you don't want them to do to you. And he said, that's basically the whole teire. Is that... That's the whole Torah. The rest is all commentary. Vidach Perishu. And he goes on to point out, or Dessa tries to explain it. He says, it's not just a nice thing. It's a very nice thing. It's an admirable thing, sure. Love your neighbor. But he says, it's much bigger. It's much more. It's much deeper than that. The whole concept of loving your neighbor like yourself, it runs much deeper. It branches out. And the pshat is like this. The Harei, he says, you see, Shabal Chesed. What it means is, first of all, what is the true definition of a Bal Chesed? The true definition of a loving person is that his whole desire is to give himself to others. In other words, he loses himself in them. He loses himself in them, as he says. Harei Shabal Chesed, hinei shi'ifosoi, his main desire is, loseis es atzmei lacherim. Hainu levatlas atzmei behem. By the way, he puts in brackets, says, that's hefach ha-chatfon. That's the opposite, he says, of someone who grasps. Someone who grasps, someone who always wants to grasp himself. He's always there to take first, he says. That's the grasper, someone, Sheshoyev, right? His ambition is to draw everything to himself. Sheshoyev limshir sakal alatsamoy. Ulavatlam besoychoy, right? And he wants to reduce everything only to himself. But with the Baal Chesed is just the opposite. The Baal Chesed is just the opposite. He's mavatl himself. He's mavatl himself for the sake of the others. His whole desire, his ambition is to serve the community. So he goes on, he says, Zeh Yargish, and he points out the following. He says, such a person, as a person who basically dedicates himself to the klal, such a person, Yargish, he says very interestingly, he says, such a person will understand, right? And he realizes, Ki kol haklal kuloi ukamoi guf echot. Oh. A person who dedicates himself to the community because he views the community as one organism. It's not that we are many individuals. If we are many individuals, then you only have a lot of people, but we're all individual. What we have to understand is the entire community is one organism. The organism has many, just within the same person, right? We have many limbs. But the hand is not separated from the legs, or from the heart, or from the mind, or from the eye. It's all part of one person. That one person has many limbs. The community has many limbs, but it's one organism. And each individual in that organism is all part of that one organism. That's if you allow yourself to be part of the community. You don't separate yourself from the community. So he says, Zeh Yargish, he says, this person will understand and experience, Kikola Klal Kuloi, that the entire community will come Guf Echot. The entire community is one organism. The Yargish is Tatsmoi. Gives a good moshul. A person, right? A person sees himself as one small part. As one small part, he says, of a large organism. He said, in the same way that the nail, right, is just as much part of your body, he says, as your finger. But it's a smaller part. Less significant. Every part of the body is part of the same body. You being part of the community means you're part of that. You're small, one small part of the larger community, which is one organism. Just like the nail, right? The small finger is just as much part of the entire body. And he will not see, right, strangers, he will not see others as being apart from him. But rather he sees it, right, as one functioning, one working of a whole. One complete working as a whole. That's what v'hafta reyacho kamoicha means. Kamoicha means kamoicha mamish, kamoicha bli hefesh klal, meaning we are one organism. So now, he quotes that from the Sil Sishon, from Omchel. Anyway, u'kishem, so now he says, so now if we view ourselves, the whole community, as being one organism, in the same way that all the limbs of a body are all part of the same body, so u'kishem, so now I'll make the analogy, let's draw the analogy further. U'kishem shebeguf ha'adam. So just like within the human body, right? Just like within the human body. He says, right within the human organism, he says very beautifully, he says, within the human organism, no individual member of that organism has a will of its own. In other words, your finger cannot want something that you don't want, because the finger is you. Your foot cannot want something different than what you want, because the foot is you. So if everybody, if you're part of the community, you dedicate that and you view the community as one organism, you can't have a separate want, right, that is not for the benefit of the community, what the community should want, for the benefit of the community. He says, so in the same way that beguf adam yefshe, it's not possible, shiel eiz a chelik min aguf, rotsim proti nifrit, it's not possible that any part of the body should have a separate want. That the finger should want something, right, that you don't want. But rather, what happens is, right, anything that you want is what everything wants. The entire human body wants it. And if the person doesn't want it, it's not possible that the finger should want it, if the person doesn't want it. Because the finger is not a separate entity than the person. Kach. So too he says, the same thing, if we can see within ourselves, right? If we can see within ourselves that everything, that we should be part, they were part of a total community. He said there was one organism. We don't have any separation. We're not individuals. We are part of one organism. We are all working for the common good. So Rav Dessler says, so if you're into understanding, so then we're one organism. If we're an organism, that means is, so therefore, your decisions are not based upon your own personal selfish interests, but rather which is really what's supposed to be the right thing to do and the proper thing to do. So this is a little bit, again, part of a longer essay regarding the inyan of Bechira. So I think a little bit, if we take out the sheet, we take a look, remaining moments, just a little bit, to see a few interesting things about making proper decisions. We can see again, we had it, Rav Dessler said it in the previous year, that certainly if a person has an agias, a person has strong biases, then of course it's going to cloud his eyes. He's not going to be able to see the right thing. He's not going to be able to see the right thing. It was once said about in Eretz Yisrael, without mentioning names, because the names are quite familiar, but in Eretz Yisrael there's always divisions of parties, but we're talking about even Gedolei Yisrael, there's different parties. Certain Gedolei Yisrael agree with this party and don't agree with other type of parties. So there was a particular Odom Godel that went over into another party, which was considered unacceptable by the very right-wing Knoyesdik party. And that Odom Godel went over into the other party, and they asked him, why'd you go over there? It's not acceptable to belong to that party. So he said, no. She says, I'm going there for the benefit. He said, for the benefit, he says, for the common good. I want to be there, so if I see that there's anything that they're doing wrong, I'll be able there to set them straight. In other words, I'm going there to right the wrongs. So they said to him, we believe very strongly that if you'll see something wrong, you're going to try to right it. We're afraid you're not going to see anything wrong anymore. That's a good... So that's it. So you have certain negiyas, you have certain biases. So you might have, philosophically, right, you have certain shittas and you have certain ways, but again, you might be clouded, you might be blinded. Very interesting, very timely, Parshas Korach over here, very clearly. Will help us understand that, making choices, talking about Bechira. Things that influence our Bechira. Moshe Rabbeinu says, right, this week's Parsha. The one that Hashem chooses, who will be the Holy One? Rav Lachem Bnei Levi. In other words, you have enough. Right? You have enough, Korach. You are Levim. Being that you are Levim, Kodesh Baruch Hu gave you enough. So you already have your opportunity to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Levim. What do you want? Kahuna also? And Rashi asks the question we have over here. Korach Shibikei Achoyah. Korach was really a very smart man. Rashi says, Beferish. Korach Chazal. Right? Meshut Tanchuma. Korach was very smart. Ma Rol Ishtuzeh. What brought him to do something so foolish? Smart man like Korach. And Rashi says, Einoi Hitosoi. His eyes, right, misguided him. His eye, he saw something and he misread it. Einoi Hitosoi means that you could see something and misread it. What did he see? Rosh al Shel is Gedoyla Yotzim Emenu. He saw tremendous yichas coming out of him. Shmuel Anovi is the descendant, Rashi says, of Korach. So Korach says, if such greatness come out of me, he says, Omar Efshe Kol Agdula Hazu, he says, Asid Al Amoid Memeni, if so much greatness will come out of me, right? Vani Edom, now you keep quiet. So Korach says, no. He says, it probably means that I also deserve greatness. So Rashi says, his eye, so it means his eye, his eye, the fact that he saw so much greatness coming out of him, so now he used that. He used that which he saw ahead into the future, right? He used that, and that led to his downfall. Had he not been able to see, by the way, it's a very interesting thing. By the way, for Korach to see his future, the Sefer Bar Yosef points out, Korach to see the future means they had Ruach HaKodesh. He was able to see now that Shmuel HaNovi is going to come out of him. Everybody thinks if you have Ruach HaKodesh, right, then there's no higher, there's no greater than you can go. You have Ruach HaKodesh. You have Ruach HaKodesh. Here you see that Ruach HaKodesh, by the way, it could be just the catalyst to drag you down. Had Korach not had Ruach HaKodesh, maybe we'd be better off. It's because he was able to see. He had Ruach HaKodesh and he saw Shmuel HaNovi come from him. So that Ruach HaKodesh turned out to be to his detriment. That turned the other way around. It was because of his Ruach HaKodesh. Had he not seen so much, he would have been maybe okay. But because he had Ruach HaKodesh, it's just the opposite. Ruach HaKodesh was the sibah of tearing him down. So we have here from Ram Kotler, we have a few words. That the question was, Korach was smart, right? So what led him to do something so foolish? So Rabban asks, Gam Achri Divra Chubi Shal HaMedrash, says that even after the answer of the Medrash, or Medrash L'Choyer HaShai L'Bim Koyim L'Choyer, the question, it doesn't answer the question. Kate said, you're talking, the question still is, how is it possible that Odom Baal Ruch HaKodesh, yes, if Korach was a Baal Ruch HaKodesh, how does he go make a mistake to argue on Moshe? Moshe Rabbeinu, Korach knew who Moshe Rabbeinu was, Korach knew that Moshe Kibbul Torah Mesinai, there's no question that Korach knew more than anybody else, he was a Ruch HaKodesh, so he really knew the greatness of Moshe. So if Korach really knew the greatness, how is this possible because of side situations? Because of side situations that Korach would go to make such a terrible mistake. Even more wondrous, more difficult. Ketzad, he says, how could such an episode take place after the Yidden saw so many nisim, so many miracles? After Yitzis Mitzrayim, they reached such madregas, seeing a Kodesh Baruch Hu. They saw openly the greatness of Hashem. Kris Yamsuf, Mamad HaSinai. So they experienced Hashoyes HaShchinah, right, in so many ways, to such great heights. How can you have such a yerida? How can you have such a downfall? How can you have such a downfall if you have reached, right, such tremendous, tremendous heights? That's what they saw by Yitzis Mitzrayim. That's what they saw by Kris Yamsuf. That's what they saw by Mamad HaSinai. And also the Midbar itself, they saw the openness and they saw the clouds of glory. The clouds of glory which protected them. And it lifted when it was time to move, and it rested when it was time to rest, and so on and so forth, continuously. And they had the man, and they had the bear, that the one, everything was miraculous. The whole survival of the Midbar was miraculous. So they continuously had so many nisim. So now they still had sfeikas, they still had some doubts. So Mataras Agorabaran Kotler Zatzal. So Baran says, Lomadnu. So what do you see from here? The answer is quite simple. It shows Ad Heichon Magia Koicho Shel Negia. How far the Koich of a bias can go. In other words, you can be intellectually very, very smart. You can be intellectually very knowledgeable. But if you have a bias, the bias is going to cloud over everything. All the seichel goes down the drain. All the seichel dissolves. It's your desire, is that which you want, that what you're going to see, and that which you're going to understand, and that's what you're going to calculate. He says, when it Shafila Kalohi, even if it's even a slight bias many times, Yesh Bekoichot has the power, La Aver Eine Chachomim. True Chachomim, not talking about false Chachomim. His ability has to be able to blind Chachomim, Kuma Shinem, as the Pesuk says, Hashoichad, which means the bribery. Bribery does not have to be money. Bribery means that which interests you. If you have a personal interest, you have an interest, by the conflict of interest, Hashoichad Yava Eine Chachomim, something we spoke about in the past. He says, and imagine, Uma Gedoyla Hashpo'osa, how great he says, the destruction of a bias can be even Eitzlanoshim Bala Hasogis Gedoylus, even of the greatest of Sadiqim. The greatest Sadiqim. He says, by the way, Korach wanted Gedula, they wanted even more Kedusha. So while you want more Kedusha, right, but you're doing it in the wrong way. Ad Kedemisiras Nefesh Hanegiyah Mahapeches Korach Hatoiv Lara. The Negiyah clearly overturns the Koich HaToiv, turns it into Ra. In other words, Irmolai HaNegiyah Shal Eino Hitosai, that's Shal Eino Hitosai. His eye misguided him, thinking that he deserves to be great. He deserves godless. So that is what really, that overturned the whole situation. I want to show you over here, we have 2-3 minutes, let's take a look here, very something interesting from the Sefer Chaim Sheish Bem Chilik Beis. It shows again how we can not try to be smarter than previous generations. And it points out also how important that is, that we follow in order to keep our legacy going. So we have to follow our forebears, that which we learn from our parents. We follow our traditions. We follow our Messiah. We follow our Gedol Yisrael. So bring something very fascinating here, that Echem Gedol HaLamdonim Yeshivas Lakewood. He brings that a particular Talmud Chochem in London from Yeshivas Lakewood, also Kamishon Lifnezeb Yeshivas Mir Bishalayim. He was a Talmud many years in Yerushalayim, a Mir. Oysit Kufa was that particular time where Oysit Tzayra, this young Talmud Chochem, would go from time to time visit the stipler. From time to time he would travel from Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak to meet the stipler. It was on a particular B'Mitzoy Yom HaKippurim, was on a Mitzoy Yom Kippur. Terem Shoye Omer Halo Lachzel Arzah Sabris. The schedule was to go back to America after Yom Kippur. So it was Mitzoy Yom Kippur, right, before he was going back to America. So he figures he's going to go. He wants to buy this farm of the Stipler, the Kilus Yankee. Stipler wrote many, many Chalokim of Rishas called Kilus Yankee. He wants to buy this farm. So in Otsa Lebeis HaGoyin, so he goes to the house of the Goyin Amanas, Lirchosh, his farm of Kilus Yankee. The Lizkois, right, Lebirchus HaTzadik, and also to receive a bracha from the Stipler. He wants to buy this farm and can receive a bracha. Kishenechnes Pnimo, when he goes inside, right, he goes to the house of the Stipler, right? With Motzim Kippur, right? So Roy, so he saw Kibalakilas Yankiv Adain Lovish Big De Yontif. He was still wearing the Yontif Digwal. He was, you know, it's Motzim Kippur. He's wearing his clothes, his Yontif clothes. He didn't change into any weekday clothes. It's Motzim Kippur. He's still Mu'utav Kittel. He was still wearing the Kittel. Did not remove the Kittel of Yom Kippur. He was saying Tehillim. Bibli Lahavchin, without even noticing that somebody's around him. What's going on? This person goes very closely, inches his way to the stipler. So here is Yisera, right? He says very cautiously, Nigash Hatsoyre, if Tsoyre means the young Talmud Chochem, the Shulchan to the table. Higish Kvitel Agoyin, and he writes the Kvitel, because the stipler, you know, wasn't able to hear. So whatever precaution you had to write it. So he writes the Kvitel, he writes it, right? As we know, he mentions it right here also. Sheshmiyosoi hoiselikuya. The hearing of the stipler was damaged. Leisik nosoi. So on the Kvitel of Rosh Hashanah Mavukshoi, he basically wrote what he needed, his request. That Hayoiz Vahu Chozelach Sabris, being that he's going back to America, Chofes, who he wants to buy Lirchosh Kamam Sfarim, he wants to buy a number of Sfarim, and he also wants a Brocha Vatzlocha. Turn this page on the side, number 4. The stipler reads the kvittel and he says, Litzari, he says, I'm sorry, he says, but I'm not able to sell you the svarim because I'm wearing Big Day Shabbos. I don't do business in Big Day Shabbos. In weekday clothes, I do business. I sell svarim, he says, but not my Big Day Shabbos. He says, Litzari, Yuchel Imko, he says, Lochem Kei Svarim. He says, I can't sell you any svarim. Hey, Yossi, Lovish Big Day Shabbos. I'm wearing Big Day Shabbos. The noyeg ani my minig is loy lasik b'misr. He called that doing misr business. So my minig is not to do business. He says, but oiden lovish big. When as soon as I wear Big Day Shabbos, I don't do any business of any kind. Why? Because I don't want to be nichshel. If I'm wearing Big Day Shabbos, then if I do business, give me money. I'll put it in my pocket. If it's Big Day Shabbos, I may forget. I don't want to have money in my Shabbos clothes. I don't have money in my Shabbos clothes. The likoshel and to be nichshel, right? Cholila b'chil Shabbos. But this young man, he was very persistent. He didn't want to lose the opportunity. He wants to buy this for the stipler. So he comes to one idea. Achat Sayer is that this young man, Shirotzal Hachmis, as has done this, he didn't want to lose the opportunity. Rosh Hampiskas, he writes another kvittel. He writes now a second kvittel. Shainian, he says, Dokhovloy says, it's very, very necessary. Ma'achar, he says, his flight is going, it's at 5 o'clock in the morning. His flight is leaving. He's not staying around. So Mamela, he says, so do me a favor, he says, I'm leaving. And in other words, if you don't sell me this farm now, I'm not going to be around. I'm leaving to America. So please, make an exception. Sell me this farm. And he says, and if you're worried about anything, I take achrayus, he says, I'll make sure that the money that I give you, that you don't put into your pocket, that you put it someplace else. So I'll make sure that the money I give you, you're not going to put into your pocket. I'll make sure it's someplace else. Al achrayusi habelod, he says, amay achrayus, he says, onochi ashgiach, he says, I'll make sure, ki rabbeinu lo yachnis es amoyis letoich kisoy. Stipler reads that second letter, that second kittel, he says, right? Lachash Yikosh Sheni says Saroshim. He's not the stipler. Bishum Oifim, he says, I can't change my minik. I can't change my minik, he says. Even though you say you're going to avoid the problem of me putting money into my Shabbos clothes, but I can't change. My minik is not to sell, to do business, farim, whatever, that's the business. In my Shabbos clothes. However, the bracha I'll give you. You want the two things, you want this one, the bracha I'll give you. Achikel Bechosi. The Gemara had the Bocher had no Eitzah, so he writes now a third kvittel. He writes the third kvittel, he writes. Boyevtiach, he says, Boyevtiach levad of alamed al amishmer, he says, I'm going to stand here, mamish arav lo yachnis lo techkisav, I'm going to stand here, I'll see to it that the money, as amoyish yekabal, I'm going to stand around till the money's put away, I'll make sure 100%. The stipler looks at him, he says, Omad Ben Koymi gets up from his place, he says, wait a few minutes till I come back. After 20 seconds or 20 minutes, the stipler comes back. He thought, maybe he didn't understand something. Because the stipler left, he said, maybe the stipler didn't understand, because the stipler just left. The stipler come back, he switched and put on his weekday clothes and he sold him this farm. He says, so he wanted to show him this how you don't change your minik. I sold you the swarm, but I didn't change my minik. I changed, he says, my clothes I changed, but not my minik, he says. So he changed the begotten. So he gives a little bit of an inkling from my side. This is all part of, see, these are the little things that show how tzaddikim are makbid on every very little thing. So we're just finishing up here, Rabbi Sai, Mamish now. Let me just tell you one akuda here. We're speaking about Chazanish, we're speaking about Stipler, speaking about Rav Dessa Bnei Brak. So let's finish with a little very interesting story, and that's a very fascinating thing. Have you ever been in Bnei Brak in the corner there by Rabbi Kivin? There's one of the streets, and there's a lot of taxis. You take a Sheirut, you go from Bnei Brak to Yerushalayim. They wait until it fills up, you know, and right away. They cost a fraction of a cost than taking a regular taxi. You know, thereby six people share the price, and so on. So you find that you're either from Yerushalayim going to Bnei Brak, back and forth, like shuttle. It goes from Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak. So it happens is on one of the rides, he says, was after the Petir of the Chazon Ish. Chazanish was nefter, as we mentioned before, 1953. The after Chazanish, they have two, basically have two from Yidden in the back of a cab. They're talking to each other. and one of them was basically sighing. He said, oh, Bnei Brak, he said, is not the same after the Chazanish passed away. Bnei Brak is not the same. The truth is, others have said that the world is not the same. In any case, the person was saying, Bnei Brak is not the same since the Chazanish passed away. So in the front was the driver of the cab. He was a non-observant Sfadi. And he heard what they were saying, that the world is not the same since the Chazon Ish passed away. and he was dressed totally different than the people there. He was there with he had no yarmulke. He wore shorts and the kitzer. So he turns around and he says to them. He says. He says there's somebody sitting in the front. You know, the sheaves are filled. The back and the front. The guys in the back, one of the guys in the back was saying that since the Chazarish passed away, the world is not the same. So the driver turns to the guy to the right. Did you hear what these guys are saying in the back? They're saying, he said, the Chazarish is gone. He says, they're wrong. The driver said, none from Sfar, he says. He says, they're wrong, he says. And they don't know what they're talking about. So, of course, they didn't understand. First of all, the irreligious cab driver, what does he know of the Chazanish Bechlal? What does he mean to say? Maybe he doesn't realize that the Chazanish passed away or something. He says, what does he mean? So he says, well, maybe you haven't heard. The guy in the back said that the Chazanish passed away already, he says, for quite a while. He says, then you're wrong again, he says. He says, you're wrong again, he says. He's still around and I can prove it. So they all wanted to hear what he has to say. The Mises, and this is an interesting thing, a non-form Sfarid cab driver, and he says the following. So my daughter, he says, was having a very difficult labor. She was rushed to the hospital in Tel Aviv, and the doctors were with her for many hours, but the child would not come. And she was in agony, the doctors seemed helpless, and they told me there was nothing that they could do. So they discussed the situation, and an old nurse who saw the predicament over said, why don't you go to the Chazanish? Doctors can't help you. Why don't you go to the Chazanish? The who? Chazanish. Okay. He's a great rabbi, he says, and he helps people. Just go to him. So what's that? And he says, well, where does he live? So she says, don't worry, just go to B'nai B'rak. Just ask anybody, he says, and they'll tell you where he lives. You'll find out where the Chazanish lives. He says, I got into my cab. He says, I raced to B'nai B'rak. No time, he says, I was the house of the Chazanish. The house of the Chazanish was late at night, but he answered the knock himself. He says, in a quiet and friendly manner, he asked how he could help me. He says, I told him my daughter's pain and how the doctors couldn't help her. He looked and smiled. He says, go back to the hospital. The child was just born. He said, he shook my hand and he wished me mazel tov on the spot. He says, my heart leaped with joy. He says, could not believe it. He says, can't believe it. He said, I dived back to the hospital. When I got there, he says, sure enough, the child, he said, was born exactly, he says, like the Chazanish said. You can imagine the people in the back, mamish, they were like spellbound. But he wasn't finished, he says. He had a second story. Second story says, 2 years later, he says, my daughter again was expecting a child, and again she had a very difficult labor. He said, once again, the doctors couldn't do nothing to speed up the child, the birth of the child. I remember what happened last time. He says, I got into my cab, he says. I didn't wait for the old nurse, he says. I remember what she told me, just go to the Chazanish. So go into the cab, go to the Chazanish, you come to the corner, right, and I ask, is this the home of the Chazanish? And the guy says to him, don't you know, he says, the Chazanish passed away. The Chazanish passed away already. He didn't know that. So I said, my heart felt as if, he says, at wit's end, who do I go to now? The Chazanish is not around. So he said, I felt like I lost my best friend. I came to speak to him, it's an emergency, to whom do I go? So the person said to him, you know, people go to the cave of the Chazanish also. They go to where? Go to the cave. To where is he buried? The man pointed in the direction of the cemetery. So he says, the driver says, I ran to the cemetery, jumped over the fence, he says, and asked people, whoever was there, to tell me where the Chazanish is buried. He pointed to a grave that was covered with a lot of stones and a lot of pebbles. And he says, I saw his name on the stone. He says, I fell on the grave, he says, and I mamish, he says, and I cried uncontrollably. And on those stones, and I begged the Chazanish, please, he says, pray for my daughter. He says, you, Rebbe, he said, you saved my daughter once, please save her again. It was there a short time. And this is what the driver said. He says, I swear that I suddenly saw his face with a smile the same way that the first time he said, mazel tov, the child had been born. So I go back to the hospital, and sure enough, she was born. And he's saying the Chazanish is no longer here. He's still here. Everybody say, I wish you a healthy summer, Bez Hashem. Shereb Meshem to meet again, very soon again, be able to start and continue to grow, and they should have a very healthy summer. And we can say already, Aksiv, Aksimetoyv as well.